episode 206 of The Platformers, a show about games and nerd culture. I'm your host, Brian Barnett.
I'm Chris Shriver.
And I'm Will Burgess.
Hi. Whoa. Hey. Oh, is that a cider, right?
This?
Nice. Yeah.
Arnold Palmer.
Will is drinking literally a cider of a brand that we actually have in our house, I think.
There you go.
It's good stuff. Yeah, Will... It has been a friend of mine for a little while now. We met through fighting games. Will, why don't you introduce yourself to our fine listeners and viewers?
Hi.
And tell them where they might know you from.
Probably not many places, to be honest. I had a review published on IGN earlier this year. I've also done some stuff for Into the Spine and a few other sites, smaller stuff mostly. But I've been playing games for a really long time and writing about them for a really long time. And I also write fiction, so yay me.
Yay, you.
Very cool.
So we've got Will on just because he's a fantastic individual, but also because we all played a game this week that I want to talk about. Shall we start with something else, loosen up a little bit, or shall we just dive right in?
Let's dive in.
Let's just dive in?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of our wonderful, wonderful PR contacts, Poppy, sent us over a couple of keys for this game called Roki, which is a Scandinavian kind of folk legend adventure game that is now on Switch, PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and I think it's on PC, but I'm not 100% sure about that. I can check on that. Later, but I played through this a few weeks ago and enjoyed it. I don't typically vibe with adventure games that much, but the basic setup of the game is that you play this young girl, and it's kind of a starts out as many adventure games do, classic day in the life. You're hanging out with your younger brother in the snow, and you come home, your dad is passed out drunk in front of the fire, so you make dinner, and shenanigans ensue wherein figures from folktales appear, you know, be they trolls, be they giant wolves and stuff like that, and it basically turns everything on its head. Oh, all these legends that I heard are true, you know, these sorts of things. And it's basically how you get from place to place, and then, you know, ultimately the main arc of the game is trying to find your brother after you get separated. There's a bit more that happens at the end, it's kind of, in my limited experience of adventure games, it's kind of standard fare as far as what you are doing, moving from place to place. You're in the kitchen and you need to figure out what you need to do. You're in the basement and you need to find out what you need to do. You're trying to find your way through the woods and try not to get lost. These sorts of things. But I think it looks pretty good. I'm maybe the most curious to find out what Will thought of the writing, because I know that writing is his forte. And I also want to hear a lot about what Chris thought from his couch. who wants to start us off?
I'll be short and sweet. So I did not play this game for very long. There aren't many adventure games that I have ever played that have really kept my attention for more than 4 hours, I would say. Like, I think the Telltale games do a really good job, and that's not even necessarily like this. Like, this is like a text-based adventure
game.
This
is an adventure game.
Yeah,
That's
a lot more cinematic.
You're not combining items in the Telltale games.
Really. Right. Like, I've played, like, Machinarium, and I think I played like half of Secret of Monkey Island. Old game is old, like just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Grim Fandango, same thing. They're just not for me.
Did you try
I've given
them
a
shot.
Did
you play any of the new Ron Gilbert game, that Thimbleweed Park? Did you play any of that?
No. And what was the other one? There was one you really liked. These kids, they're like, it starts
not
out.
Not Broken
you're on
Age.
No, you're on a beach.
Oxenfree?
Yes. I couldn't get through that either.
I mean, that game rips.
And everyone loves that game. And I just like it. it's just not my cup of tea. That and here's, but here's the problem.
That doesn't, I don't think that that's, I don't think of that as an
no,
adventure.
No, I think it's just like games where you have to read a lot. I think it's just I'm at a point now, and maybe it'll change, you know, as like, you know, with this new job and everything, and I'm not working as much, but I, if I start to read on the couch and I'm playing, I typically play games at night. Well, yeah. I live in Pennsylvania and it's very, very dark out by like 5 o'clock right now. Yeah. So like it was 6:30 the other night and I started playing Roki. I probably played for like 2 or 3 hours, probably 2.5 hours, and, just passed the hell out right on the couch, like in the middle of playing, and I had no idea. And I was out for like a good, like 45 minutes and I was like, well, guess I'm done with this. I mean, that being said, I think it's a beautiful game. I think where it's going, I think people that like that kind of Norse folklore type of storytelling, I think they would really enjoy it. But it's just not my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what'd you think? And how far did you get?
So I haven't finished it. I've played it for about 7 hours. I'm at the end of chapter 2. I'm okay. Going after the third big thing. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Brian, you know where I am.
Yes. Yeah. I beat it. I don't know if I said that. Yeah, I beat it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually almost 100%ed it. And this was a fun thing for me. This is the first time this ever happened. So I played this on Xbox Series X, and unless someone else was just not online or whatever, I got every achievement in this game world first, except for the last one.
Oh, wow.
Which I didn't get. I just didn't. I got all but one achievement because the last achievement requires you to have gotten everything and, like, done everything, like, in one playthrough. So I got to the end and went back and was like, here, let me do this last side quest. And I was missing, like, two things. There's a side quest that has to do with a troll early on, and you have to not do something and do something else instead. But it's not... It's kind of intuitive, but it's, like, not... It's just not what I did. And so I had to go back and start a new game and play, like, a couple hours to get to that point. Because then I was like, oh, maybe this will also trigger this 100% thing because this is the last thing I have to do. But no, you have to have done it all at the same time on a single file so that when you beat it, it pops. And I was like, I'm not going after this whole thing all over again. But yeah, getting all of those and having them pop up with the achievements on my Xbox saying 0% complete diamond achievement was like pretty fun. So... There were definitely some people. I also played a little bit of it on PS5, and it got to the point when I got to like the second part of the first chapter or the first part of the second chapter, I started getting those, yo, nobody's done this before. And I was like, oh, shit, all right. But yeah, anyway, yeah. So I beat it and, you know, went minorly achievement hunting. But Will, what were you saying?
Oh, I wasn't sure what to expect of it at first. I do like adventure games. I grew up playing like the old Sierra stuff, and like love Grim Fandango, love a lot of the LucasArts stuff. But I wasn't really sure because adventure games have changed so much, you know, especially in the last few years.
The genre is kind of split down the middle, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, some of them have gone kind of in the direction that Telltale went, and some of them are like, we're going to do the classic adventure game stuff, and you never really know what you're going to get. I think that genre is such a broad descriptor. You know, it's like action adventure. It's like, oh, okay, cool. You know, Zelda's that, Uncharted's that. What am I playing?
Right.
Exactly.
so I went into it, and initially I was like, okay, it's a little slow. But I'm digging the vibe. You know, the vibe's good. It's beautiful. The music's really nice. And the more I played it, the more I started to like it. And I actually want to finish it. And I was hoping I could finish it before we did this, but it's as far as the writing goes, I think it's actually pretty clever in its use of like these bits of folklore and how it like sets up based on what the audience thinks is going to happen and also what the character thinks is going to happen, then starts subverting them in little ways. And I think that it also does its storytelling really interesting ways through the environment, where you know, stuff will change depending on things you do in the world, and you can be like, oh, right, this happened because I did this thing. And, you know, the game sometimes remarks on it. Like, the main character, Tove, will sometimes remark on, like, oh, this thing didn't used to be here. But a lot of it is, like, these very, like, subtle little changes that you notice as you go through the course of it. So I thought that was nice.
Yeah. I think they've got a pretty good attention to detail. And a lot of the... I mean, I will... One thing I will say that I think is greatly to the game and the development team's credit is I get stuck a lot in classical adventure games because I never played them growing up. I think the only one I ever had was my uncle gave me Maniac Mansion. And I found that game completely inscrutable because I was like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, something like that. And like, I don't know. I walked around and then I was like, you know what? I want to play Contra instead or Mario or something, you know, Mega Man. Yeah, I want to play something else.
I want to play Contra and die.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, I only played that game with the code. Come on, let's be real. So I can die a lot before the game is over. But yeah, so I had poked around in these worlds and picked up a bunch of items, but like I didn't know what I was doing. And like I never really played Grim Fandango until it came out on Vita, I think. Mm. And I never really played... Like the most type of adventure games that I vibed with were the Telltale ones, which are like so watered down compared to the old ones. They don't make you... They don't ask you to make any logical leaps. They don't ask you to kind of intuit what in your inventory you need to use or combine with something else to progress. And one thing that I think is really good about this game is that I never was at a loss of what to do except for maybe 2 or 3 times in the whole game. And I think this game is like 12 to 16 hours or something like that.
I think what gets me with this game, and I think most adventure games...
9.5 to 12 hours on how long to beat. So
okay. That was the other thing, too. I was like, I don't know that I want to do this for 9 or 12 hours. Like, it's just, yeah. That's a lot. And it's funny because, like, one of the games that I played all the way through and beat this week was Resident Evil 7, and that game does a really good job at this, where when you have an item in your inventory and... It's like, oh, you need this coin or whatever. Or in Roki's case, it was like, you know, you need, you have like eggs or whatever the case may be, like when you're in the kitchen. Yeah. In my head, I'm like, all right, it's in my inventory. Like, I have it. And it's like, nope, you need to hit the inventory button and then you got to click it and you got to move it over the thing. And I'm like, all right, like, do we really have to do this? Yeah. Like, and I get
so
that that's part of it.
You can't just interact with the pan or whatever. And then it's like, I'm just going to use this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like, right. It's like, nah,
you got to combine.
You got to take the glue, drag it over to the button, drag it over to the doll's eyes, right. You know, do that sort of thing.
And like, as soon as I started doing that, like it happened like one too many times. And I was like, this is going to be the whole game. Like, this is how adventure games are. And this is why I don't like them.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, I'm a stupid man. Like it's why I like Uncharted so much. It's like, just put me on the rails and give me something to shoot. And I just want to go.
And the tricky thing about that is that, like, what it would be if you took all of that out is just walk over here, press A.
It's a visual
walk
novel
over there,
at that point.
Press A.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
That's basically what it is. And that's what the game is. And, like, I don't like those kinds of games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets more complicated as you go on.
Like, oh, I'm sure it does. It's like you probably get more in your inventory at once. And you have to figure out what combines with what and...
Well, and even there's like stuff that doesn't necessarily make like it makes sense when you think about it, but like it's not something that you would necessarily, or at least me, it's not something that I would necessarily look for. Like, I'm not sure if you got to the point where you got the wand, Will.
Not yet.
Okay.
Spoilers.
Yeah. So like when that happened, I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is outrageous. Like that is definitely a part of the game where I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing right now with this. But, you know, there were some happy accidents. But overall, I don't know. I thought it was interesting. So, Will, do you have anything else to say about, like, how this measures up against, like, older adventure games as far as, like, the logic kind of stuff goes?
Yeah, actually, I did want to talk about that when you guys were talking about it. I think it's really intuitive in terms of what works where. There's a sequence... At one point, I'm going to try to be vague here, where you use a round object to do something. And then you need that round object for something else in a different puzzle. And I picked up another round object, and I was like, I wonder if this would work in the same place. And it did, because I needed the first object to do a very specific thing. And the game, I think, also does a really nice job of signposting stuff. Like, at one point, you're in this forest, and you come across this pond, and you'll see coins. And you'll be like, oh. You know, and Tovey will be like, oh, you know, people will throw coins into this pond. I wish I had some coins. And then later on, you'll be like, I have coins. I know exactly where to go with those.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
which is the puzzle that I was talking about earlier, where, like, there's another thing you can do with that before you toss them in the pond that I missed. Yeah.
I missed that too, then. I think it also, you know, does a nice job of just having things make sense and work in ways that are kind of obvious once you have the item in your inventory. There's that one puzzle with where you have to maneuver the lights a very specific way. And you can look at your inventory and be like, okay, this one tilts this way, which means, it's, you know, it's not
the spider puzzle. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a generic, like, this is the mirror. It's, this is the mirror. It tilts this way. So as you're trying to do this puzzle and you're climbing all over this area, you can be like, oh, right. If the light's coming from here and I need it to go here, I need a mirror that tilts like this.
Yeah. You can just open your inventory and at a glance be like, okay, so this needs to go there. That needs to go there. Got it.
Right. And even the way that it allows you to highlight stuff, the Monkey Island remakes do this too, where you can see what's interactable. It also gives you just a good idea with the way the environments are designed, right? If you see like a thing that is like, oh, there's a couple hooks here and I need to be able to get up there. So you're like, okay, I'm looking for something that would roughly fit in that space.
Yeah.
Right? So like my straw is not going to work. I need something a little bit wider. So I think it does a really nice job of signposting that stuff. The only time I think I ever got lost was when I didn't go into a room and grab something. Like, I didn't see an entranceway to a certain place. It happened twice. Where I was like, man, I don't have this item. And I had to look it up. And it was like, oh, there was a door there. Oh, let me go back and get it.
I had that happen as well with, like, the was it the house that was, like, half buried in snow? And the main character comments on it. But, like, I tried to move into it, and it, like, didn't work. And then I'm like, oh, no, there's, like, a full thing. Like, you just have to walk in and then over. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And it uses the background really effectively to deliver that information. You know, at one point, you have to figure out how to, like, swap this one thing for this other thing. And if you look in the background, it's like, oh, she has a bunch of these. I have acquired one of these. I bet this would work.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think, you know, adventure games can be very inscrutable. I could not finish Grim Fandango without a guide. Couldn't do it.
Really?
Yeah, because some of that stuff is just like, how in the world would you expect me to know to put this here?
Yeah.
Right? And not in any of these other 15 places.
Real talk, if I wouldn't have looked up a guide, I don't think I would have gotten out of the tutorial of Grim Fandango.
Yeah,
it's... Like, literally the first room, I was like, what like, the fuck is this?
What's the...
Stick
like, do you,
the glue
are you,
in the tunnels!
Like, well, are you a fan of Grim Fandango, or...
Yes. I'm not a fan of its puzzle design. I really like the writing. I think the writing is
okay.
Great.
Because I was like, I don't understand what there is to come back to at that point. It's like, cool, you gave me a homework assignment.
Yeah, if anybody who hasn't, you know, is listening to this or watching this and being like, man, I should play Grim Fandango, play it with a guide.
Yeah.
Just go in and enjoy the story. That's what you should be there for. Okay. Otherwise, it's going to drive you up the wall. But
kind of like Zelda 1.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's and adventure games are one of those weird kind of games where you know, you talked about Uncharted just kind of doesn't really expect you to know how to play it. It's like, let me show you how this works. Adventure games for a really long time were like, we're gonna assume you've played this and therefore understand the design of that. Right? And so they would just keep building on each other, and if you didn't come in with that institutional knowledge, you were just kind of like, what?
Yeah. Adventure games come with assigned reading.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
if you didn't do the assigned reading, you're going to come in on the first day of class, and it's not really the first day of class.
No, it's like the 15th day of class, and you're like, please, professor, please don't call on me. I didn't, you know.
Oh, hey, look at that. Look in the background.
Oh, yeah, it's been there for a while.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
I've been
but yes,
engaged.
You have.
I've been
in
so
the conversation.
By our discussion.
My goodness.
That I didn't notice that Roki was playing in the background.
I didn't notice it either. I saw it was still the Halo reel.
Yeah. God, Master Chief is so small now.
I know.
Right? And he's got a red hat.
And he's very flat.
That's so crazy.
Come to think of it.
Man, If it wasn't out of focus, I could finally see his face.
For some reason, like, this view of it, it reminds me of Over the Garden Wall. Like, I feel like it looks like that, but it absolutely is not. Like, on the TV, she doesn't look like that. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah. Did anybody else have any, like, kind of final thoughts or, like, other stuff they wanted to mention about the game?
I think I have one more thing. I don't want to monopolize. I feel like I'm...
No. Go for it.
Didn't play it, so you're good.
I really like the way that it makes concessions to the player. In that there's like a fast travel system, because the second chapter is really long.
It's really long.
You know, I would say that I've spent probably 6 of my 7 like hours in the game just in chapter 2.
Yeah.
And it kept getting bigger and bigger. And I was like, at some point, this is going to end, right? And then I realized, no, you have to do this other thing. But the game rewards you for, you know, exploring and finding, like, oh, hey, I can use this tree to fast travel, right? You don't have to do that. The game never at any point is like, you have to go find this particular tree. But it rewards you for doing it in the same way that it rewards you.
And they're present in all of the areas that you're going to be going to anyway. Mm-hmm. So if you're exploring, you're just going to find them.
Right.
And they hand them out like candy.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but it also just, it was something that I appreciated because a lot of adventure games, especially the classic ones, they don't do that. You know, you want to walk around in Grim Fandango, you go walk around. Nobody's helping you, right?
Yeah.
And just acknowledging, like, hey, this is really big. Let's give the player an easier way to navigate this. Or, hey, you know, they might need help. Let's give them someone they can go back to and talk about general stuff. Or the journal. Hey, you know, the character's going to be giving you updates, like, in her little journal as you go through. So you can be like, did I do something in this area? Oh, right. You know, she wrote about it. And I think that a large part of the reason that a lot of people fell off of adventure games or just never jived with them was because they don't do that. They just expect you to kind of go in and be like, all right, this is the way that it is. You're either going to be there with us or you're not.
Yeah.
And I think the reason that they became so inscrutable over time was the, you know, like I said, the institutional knowledge of the player base that had built that up was like, great, awesome, we're here for you. And everybody else was like, what? Excuse me? What do you mean the pencil goes in the light bulb? You know?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was. So the fact that this was like, hey, you know, you still feel smart when you solve a puzzle, but also we're going to help you.
Yeah.
And it never felt, you know, like it was beating you over the head with it, right? Like,
yeah.
Like how Uncharted would sometimes be like, hey, you haven't solved this puzzle yet. Look at Nate's journal.
Did you look at the journal? Yeah. And
you
it just
idiot.
Keeps like dinging. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I really appreciate that.
That makes me think of something, which like looking at it over the course of the game, like I told you, there were some parts where I was like confused. I think that the difficulty curve is actually like pretty good. Like it's pretty good because when it starts out, like your first puzzle, I guess, really is just, hey, let's show you how to interact with objects in the world, which is like your little brother is hiding behind this totem and you need to throw a snowball at him. Super easy. Pick up one object, use it on something else. Easy, easy. Second puzzle, you have to fix a toy. The toy is on the ground, you interact with it, then you search the environment for something else you need, you find the glue, you glue something back on, then you give it back. It's a slightly more complicated puzzle, but it's ramping you up to it. Then, you know, you're in the next area and you're making eggs and you have to look for like 3 or 4 things that you have to interact and you have to interact with certain things in certain places and all that sort of thing. And then by the end, it does feel like what those other adventure games were at the beginning. Like the first scene in Grim Fandango is like the end of chapter 2 or the middle of chapter 2 or chapter 3 in Roki. Mm-hmm. So it actually, like, you know, you going through that will kind of unlocked that for me of like, yeah, you know, this would be a good adventure game to like introduce somebody to the genre, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's like a very, because I am cursorily like kind of inducted into Norse mythology, but not like this corner of Norse mythology, not this flavor of Norse mythology. Like I never really learned about trolls that much. I never learned about, you know, I knew about the Yule Cat, but only because I listened to a bizarre podcast for a long time and they talked about the Yule Cat and the Yule Lads and Krampus and all that sort of stuff. But like it gives you enough where you can kind of be introduced to this world at the same time. Like, you can go into this not knowing anything about the culture, and it kind of introduces you to it because it's from the perspective of children. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really cool way of doing it. I think that the story conceit is, like, it's very simple, it's very straightforward, but, like, it plays with you emotionally, and it plays with you, you know, with what it expects of you. And later on, there are, like, some flashback and memory sequences that are pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. And interesting in a way that is kind of reminiscent of not like Disney movies, but like fairy tales, like fables, where, you know, it's not all sugar, cookies and milk. Like, there's a little kick to this. There's a little spice to this. And I respect that a lot, because it could have been a very straight putt. It could have been a very easy kind of milk toast, you know, one par, straight, no turns, you know, green right here for your putting green. But they throw some curves in there, and I like that. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's something, Will, when you get to act three, there's some little twisties in there, which I'm excited for you to experience.
That's cool. I'm excited.
But yeah, so, overall, I mean, I think we can move off of it, unless anybody has any final thoughts, but, I just wanted to say, I think it's great. I really, really enjoyed my time with it.
Seconded. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me look up how much this actually is so we can inform.
I want to say it's 20.
Yeah, it's 20.
Yeah.
Oh, look at this. I didn't know this. Yeah, it is available on Steam. It has full controller support. It got a Eurogamer recommended. And what is it? RPS Bestest Bests. It was nominated for a BAFTA. It's a Game Awards nominee. Jesus Christ.
It's a very good game. It's very well made.
Yeah.
It's presentation-wise, like, it is very good for what it is. And I don't mean that, like, pejoratively. It's just, like, as an adventure game, I think it's presented very well.
Just not for you.
Maybe. I just don't like adventure games.
Yeah, so it is available on Steam, on Steam PC. It is available on Switch for $20. It is also available on PS. I think it's, I don't know if it's available on PS4 and Xbox One, but
it is not available on Xbox One because
it's not.
No, it's not. And the reason I know this is because initially Brian was like, here's an Xbox One key. And I, because it was like Series X, right? And I was like, of course it'll work, right? Smart delivery. It's great. Turn it on. We cannot boot this game. It only works on Series X. So I was like, oh no. So it doesn't work on Xbox One.
So it's on Switch, on PC, and on PS5 and Series X / S. And it runs well, like, performance-wise. I never had any issues with it. It never crashed for me. It never looks great. Runs well. So, yeah. I think that if it runs and looks as good on Switch, that would be a great place to play it, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would be really, really fun. Plus, it's, like, as we said, not that long. So, yeah. I definitely recommend it. Another thing that I was playing that we... I don't know if Chris played. Did you play Unpacking? Okay.
Nope.
So Unpacking is another game. It's out on Game Pass, which is awesome. And on Game Pass for PC, which is where I recommend that you play it.
Because, why?
For reasons that we will get into.
Oh.
I'll just tell you right now. Play this game with a mouse.
Click and drag.
It is orders of magnitude better with a mouse. Like, it is...
How
wild!
How long did it take you to beat?
Not that long, like just a couple hours.
Hell yeah! Yeah. I'll download it now.
I think it's like 3 hours or something.
I think it's 3 hours max.
Yeah, this is the. I'm telling you, dude.
Give me them tiny games.
This game is the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Unpacking 3.5 hours main story, completionist 4.5 hours. So if you want to get
wanting more, it's just
if you want to get all of those chivos. Four and a half hours.
And it's not even a gig.
No. So this is by... actually, you know what? Let me look up... Before we fully move on, let me look up the Roki developer so we can give them a shout-out, because they did a good job.
Is...
Polygon Treehouse.
Yes.
Thank you, Polygon Treehouse, for making adventure games accessible.
Yes, thank you, Polygon Treehouse. So Unpacking. Unpacking is developed by Witchbeam, which is an awesome developer studio name. Like, and when you pull up the game, it's like a witch, like, doing like a laser beam out of a wand, I think.
That's a great name.
Yeah, it's super cool, super cool. So basically what Unpacking is Unpacking is a wordless storytelling game where all you do mechanically is unpack boxes and put the stuff around apartments or houses. That's it.
It's like cleaning your room, but fun.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
little known fact about Chris Shriver. I love rearranging furniture. Like way too much. Like, is it like that?
You're not rearranging furniture. You're literally only putting stuff up on that is coming out of boxes. So like it'll be a room, and let me tell you, it is a powerful point that is made by this game that the only things you can move are the things that are in your boxes that you are unpacking. This is maybe the best game I've played in several years. As far as using mechanics to tell very specific points, it is masterfully done. And it also is, it tells a better story with zero words than I'm trying to think of another game that does this. And I think the only other one that I can think of is something like Journey or Abzu. Where like this game, there's no words, there's no text. There's a little bit of text, but just as like photo captions and stuff like that. But like other than that, there's nothing, and everything that you're seeing is you're going through different periods in this person's life, and you're unpacking different boxes of their things. And so when you're taking it out, you're seeing, what do they have? And on a subsequent move, what do they still have? What do they not have anymore?
Oh, man.
I welled up at one point when there was like when I clicked over to one of the, you start out and you're like in like one or two rooms or something, and you click back and forth between the rooms because sometimes, like happens in real life, you're unpacking a box and this shit doesn't go in this room. It goes in a different room because you had to pack it. So you click on the thing, you click over to another room and you move it over to where it needs to be. But as I was clicking through, as you go, you know, later on, there are multiple rooms, and I was like clicking through the rooms and I got to one room and I gasped and I was like,
I think and I know what it is, what it was. Cause yeah, I think I had the same reaction.
This sounds like a What Remains of Edith Finch kind of moment.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Like the fish moment.
Or the swing set.
Or the swing set. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, What Remains of Edith Finch? Chris and I go way back.
God,
you know,
there are,
we love that game.
Somewhere deep in my Twitter, there are photos of me post at two or three in the morning, post playing What Remains of Edith Finch, and I'm just a hot mess.
He's a mess.
I cried so hard. I just took pictures of myself and was just like, "Look at what this game did to me."
Now, I don't know that you will get that out of this game because this is largely, I think, a mild kind of experience, but it is an emotional experience. Chris, you have not played it at all, so Will, I wanna throw it to you. What do you want to say?
I just want to second the point you were talking about using mechanics to tell story, because it's a big thing for me, just like as a thing that I would wish more games would do. You know, interactivity is the basis of the medium. Please use it to do interesting things.
Yeah,
use it to communicate with us, and I think. You know, even just realizing where stuff can't go says a lot.
Yes.
Like when I don't want to
spoil maybe explain how areas end, just to kind of highlight your point.
So, an area finishes when everything is more or less in the right place. There's multiple, like if you're in a bedroom, right, and you have a table, you can put a bunch of different things on the table basically any way you want, but certain things can't go on the table, right? They have to go on like the poster board or like in the closet.
If you got a soccer ball, it should probably not go on your table.
The table, right. Your desktop should probably not be sitting on your bed.
Yeah.
It has to go next to the desk. So the game will end an area or basically give you a little notification that, hey, everything's in the right place when everything is more or less in the right place. But it'll also tell you, hey, this item shouldn't be here. And I think the most powerful moments for me were when I had this one item and it seems like it should go in this one area with the other items like it.
Oh, but man.
It doesn't.
Yes. And that was... I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about. And I was like, God damn, unpacking?
Mm-hmm. And you're... You know, as you're unpacking, you're trying to figure out... Because the game never really tells you, right? It never comes out and says, hey, it's been 3 years. This is what happened in the meantime. You just kind of like, stuff changed. The apartment's bigger. It's smaller. What happened? How did we get here? What does this mean? You know? And so you're creating this little narrative in your head. And you're constantly revising what the narrative is based on the information that you get. You know, what you unpack. What's there and still. What's not there. You know, does an item get damaged? Right?
Yeah.
And that specific one, and we're on the same page here, was like, a confirmation of what I thought it was. I was like, oh,
yeah,
no, you know? And then looking back, it made me rethink the previous section because there was one item that felt like it should go in certain places and it couldn't. And you kind of had to shove it onto the bed.
Yeah.
And it does this in this really effortless way, or at least it feels effortless. I'm sure it was very, very, you know, complicated to get that across and took a lot of testing. But it never feels like it's trying to manipulate you. It just feels like this is a normal thing that would happen, right? If this happened to you, you'd do a similar thing. And I admire that the game is willing to trust the player that much to draw the conclusions of, oh, okay, I see.
Yeah.
And let us discover it on our own terms and kind of how, depending on where, you know, where you start. Where you finish, you know, bathroom might be the last room we unpack. So I think it's really neat.
One thing that I remarked about, I was playing this game on the couch while we were, incredible juxtaposition of things that I was doing. I was playing unpacking on my laptop with my mouse while on the TV, my wife and I were watching Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which we're finally like getting through, which is like the most acidic, like just vile group of people combined with what I was playing, which was like this you know, poignant, you know, heartwarming but sometimes melancholy experience of unpacking. And it's, you know, I kind of commented, and she was like kind of half watching what I was doing as well. And for a while, when I first started, I was actually playing on Series X on the TV. So that was how she, you know, Audrey was sitting on the couch next to me and kind of hanging out and playing Switch and stuff. And so I would kind of comment on things. And what it reminded me of was the kind of idiom that you can learn a lot from someone by looking through their garbage. And this is what that is writ large. Like this is, you can tell a lot about someone because you never see anyone's face. Like you see very, very pixelated like pictures of people, but they're so very small and they're so pixelated. They're kind of like impressionist paintings or something. Like you're not really meant to see specifics. You're just meant to see like kind of what's happening in these pictures. But there's not pictures in every scene and there's not that many of them either. You never see any of these characters. You never see like letters from them or anything like that really. And so it was really interesting to me how powerfully I picked up on the personalities of these people, the personality of the person whose boxes I am unpacking. You know, just tell, I mean, it's Dark Souls with no combat, basically. Like, walk through this area and look around and figure out what happened here. Something awful happened here, you know, and what was it? You know, and if you're not in... And like in Dark Souls, you can go through this entire game and, like, not really pay attention to that and just be like, oh, cool, I felt good clicking the stuff around the room, and there's ridiculous amounts of sound customization. If you take a bottle of water and you put it down on a wood shelf, it makes a different sound than on the bathroom floor and on this and on that and on that. And that is, their attention to detail is, like, really impressive. And the art is great. Like, I love it. And, you know, a lot of cheese has been made on Twitter of, like, hey, look at the movie covers, look at the game covers. Like, you can tell one of these is Double Dash, one of these is Donnie Darko, you know, or whatever. So there, like, is a lot of, like, nostalgia stuff that you can pick up on if you're paying attention. But at the same time, I've never so powerfully had pure mechanics and pure aesthetics combine to be like, yo, this person is an asshole. Like, and does not care about you or what you want or what you need. And I was just like, wow, how did you do that? So I am extremely excited to see what Witchbeam does next, because this game, look at the, you know, the cover of the game, look at the font of the name of it. Like, it is very, like, handwritten. Like, a part of me is like, this could have very easily come and gone and nobody noticed it.
Yeah.
Like, this could have just been one of those games that just came and went on Steam and nobody cared and nobody noticed. And it's just one of those hidden gems. But people did notice, and people have been talking about it, and it's on Game Pass, you know? And so I really hope that Witchbeam gets to, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do Unpacking 2. I would love that, because I think there's still a lot of room to tell more stories, even just about this character, via this sort of a thing. And actually, the game ended before I thought it was going to.
But even wanting more, you know?
Yeah, exactly. it's definitely, I mean, at 3.5 hours, you can literally just sit down and play the whole game. Mm-hmm. Although I definitely recommend that you savor it, because this one goes down smooth. So any final words on this one before we move on?
I don't know. As much as I would love Unpacking 2 Electric Boogaloo, like, that would be great, right? Like, because it's just so wonderful. And it's a wholesome game. You come out of it and you just feel good, right? Even though, like, some of the stuff is not great, you just come out of it and you're like, that was nice.
That was nice.
That was really nice, you know?
It's like a nice after-dinner mint. It's there, and then it's gone, and you're like, ah.
Yeah,
nice.
You're like, man, I love After Dinner Mints. Man, I love Unpacking. That was great. But
Unpacking, the Andes of the video game world.
I don't know. I think part of it, though, is, like, its brevity and its cleverness and knowing when to stop, right? You know, almost every game, I think, is too long. It's my weird little opinion that most games could be shorter and be better for it. And Unpacking just hits this note where it's just like, we're good. See ya. You're just like, it's like spending time with a friend that you haven't seen in a couple years, right? You go to dinner, maybe you do something before dinner or after dinner, you have a great time. And you're like, man, I want to do this all the time. But then you realize, like, well, that was great. That was perfect. I couldn't have made that any better.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I hope that which is the greatest name in the history of anything, does something neat next and just lets Unpacking be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely fine with that. Yeah, I would love Unpacking too. Whatever they want to do, I trust them. Like, they've earned it. Mm-hmm. There are some studios out there that they make one game, they make two games. I'm like, okay. They make three games. I'm like, all right, we're good. I trust you. They got this one in one, which is impressive.
It's rare. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, okay, cool. Go do your stuff. Do your stuff. And I will definitely be there checking it out.
Harry, one thing I wanted to mention before. Harry, well, in case you don't know, is one of our biggest fans that is here every single week, and I love him very much. But he said it's also reminiscent of Florence in the way that it does its wordless storytelling.
Yes. Florence, yeah. Another one of these all-time greats of this.
Yeah.
Very, very brief game. Very good. Very emotionally resonant. tells honestly a lot of similar themes between Unpacking and Florence. That is well observed, Will.
Mm.
Or Harry.
I'm grateful that you're giving me credit for things I
Yeah, do. I mean, yeah. Accept it, you know?
Good job,
what's,
Harry.
What's Harry going to do? He's not here. He's only not in here. The chat.
Yeah. But yeah, great game. And it's on Game Pass. Play it. Play it with a mouse.
Word.
Okay. So I got one other thing. I don't know if either of you played this. Have either of you touched The Forgotten City?
Mm-mm.
No.
Also a Game Pass game.
And this is, if I understand correctly, this started out as a Skyrim mod? Is that what the story with this was? I could be wrong.
That's weird, because I looked this up, and I definitely saw the Forgotten City Skyrim mod.
So, Dornbush has a, on IGN.com, has a write-up on this. I didn't read it, I posted the thing when it came out over the one weekend I was working, but...
Yo, if this was going to be a Skyrim mod, several things make a lot of sense.
But I think it started out as that, and then they kind of branched off, and they were like, no, there's something here, and we can, you know, build it off of, you know, what we have going.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, so this is a first-person role-playing adventure game published by Dear Villagers and developed by Modern Storyteller. And this has been getting a lot of oxygen on social media, at least in my circles. I know that Blessing has shouted it out. Mm-hmm. Former guest host Janet Garcia has shouted it out. And a couple of other people. But I had been meaning to play this. The entire premise of this, of The Forgotten City, is there is a city.
And it's been forgotten.
And it's been forgotten, and we find it. No, but the idea is there's this city 2,000 years in the past in Rome where if anyone commits a sin within the city, everyone is put to death. And so the idea is that they are trying to create a utopia. They're trying to create like this perfect society, this perfect city. By basically like mutually assured destruction, essentially.
Sounds like it would take a really long time.
Yeah. but basically what it is it combines that premise with Groundhog Day. So you were sent back 2,000 years in the past to this city. And your job is to try to... Basically, you arrive there. Somebody's like, hey, you're new. Let me introduce you to the magistrate. And they walk you up to the magistrate, and the magistrate is like, hey, someone is going to break the golden rule today, and that sin is going to doom everyone. I need you to find out who it is. And much like a lot of these kind of rhythm, not rhythm like Chris's favorite genre rhythm, but like schedule type rhythm games, people have places that they're going to be at certain times. The day kind of progresses, you know, you start in the morning and then there's the afternoon and the night and people are doing different things at different times. And you're kind of just wandering around in this very, very small city. And there's a lot of, if you're an antiquarian, you're going to love it. If you're into old style architecture, like, you know, you've got your Greek and Roman architecture, it's awesome. Like, it's really, really cool. You've got your centurion, you've got your, you know, your classic robes and the, you know, leather skirts and all that sort of business. It's great. But it tackles a lot of interesting issues. Because you are a character who hails from roughly our modern day, you're going back into a society that has no problems or qualms with slavery. And doesn't have any problems with indentured servitude and all of these sorts of things. And so this game explores the idea of sin. What is a sin? What isn't a sin? Why? What is happening in this city that makes this happen? Because basically the initial rhythm is you kind of explore, you poke around, you meet people, you introduce yourself. Of course, there are 51st dates after every loop. So they have no idea who you are, but you still know all their information and you can use that to your benefit. But the voice acting is really good. The interactions between characters are very interesting. It felt very real during my time with it. It's like, it's a totally ridiculous thing to say because it's a fantastic premise. But like the characters felt a lot like characters. I would say the only real limitation with this game, and the only thing that I would say, like, be aware of, is that technically it's kind of janky. Like the jump is not very good. The aiming is not very good. And you only have like one potential weapon and stuff like that. It's a bow and it's like, it's not great. Like, I think that this probably would have, as janky as Skyrim is, this probably would have benefited from having Skyrim's bow controls and stuff. God. But they're somewhat similar. Yeah.
Whoa.
That's, oof. Yeah.
That's a little concerning.
But I will say it's worth it. It's worth it to get through this. So this is, let me actually pull up my notes real quick.
Sounds like Majora's Mask, except, you know, more detective-y.
Well, and longer, right? Like, yeah. Well, how long? Maybe. How long is...
5 to 8 hours.
So not as long as Majora's Mask. Majora's Mask is definitely...
Well no, but a day-night cycle in Majora's Mask is...
It would depend. Do you...
It depends on where you're at, though, right? Mm-hmm. Doesn't it? Yeah.
And, yeah, it freezes when you're in a dungeon, yeah.
Yeah, it freezes when you're in a dungeon, and, you know, and...
Yeah.
Dawn of the Final Day energy from Forgotten City, which is cool.
Now, the interesting thing about this is that you can end, anytime anyone sins, that ends the loop. Like, you have to run back to the portal and it resets the day. So you can literally walk up, steal something, reset. Or like walk up, do one thing, kill someone, reset.
Vanellica in the chat is asking, do you need to fight a lot of enemies in the game? Like, is there, like, what's the ratio of like combat to just like, I don't know, playing the Game of Thrones, or however you want to put it,
interacting
with characters.
It's probably like 25-30%
of combat.
Like, of combat versus like 70-80% not combat.
Of like exploration and
the vast majority of the game, you don't have to engage in the combat, but there are two. There are two stretches of the game where it's most of what you do.
Okay.
Just as you're going there, without spoiling it, I can't really go into more. But the game does tell you, the game does actually warn you when you're about to start a long section. They're like, hey, if you don't like spooky stuff or action, maybe don't do this.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But we made those bow controls, damn it, and you're going to use them. Somebody's going to suffer through this.
It's. I think they could have alleviated it in a couple of ways. If they had made the... There's a couple of things that I will say about this. One, the enemies are kind of zombie-like, but they're fast. I feel like if they would have made them slower, it would have been easier.
So it's like you have a weapon that like you're not actually equipped to take on the enemies as well as you would expect
you,
to be
so,
with in
okay,
other games.
Let me dive deep into it to kind of explain this.
Okay.
So you have from the jump, you don't have any weapons. Well, unless you pick one of the backgrounds, if you can choose some of your backgrounds, you start the game and it has you select like who you are, your body type, your pronouns, these sorts of things, and then like your history. So you can either be, I'm an archaeologist. I was looking for ancient ruins in this area. So then they'll kind of comment on, I didn't play as this person. They'll kind of comment on things that you see because it's an ancient Roman city.
Right.
So they'll comment on that sort of thing. There's also, I was on a special operation in the area. So I've got my firearm with 10 rounds only, but because you're sent back in time, there's no way to get more, so you only have 10 rounds. And I have no idea how the gun controls. And then there's there might be four or three, I can't remember if there is a fourth one, but the one I chose was Amnesiac, and that basically makes it I think 50% harder for you to get taken down, so I guess you have like extra health, which ended up being a boon to me, because when anyone commits a sin, these golden statues that are positioned around the city come to life and start shooting bows and arrows at people. Or they don't shoot bows at people. They withdraw. They draw out their bows and they start shooting.
They shart arrows.
They shoot arrows at people that turn them into gold.
Okay.
And so when you get clipped by these, it takes a little bit off of your little circle of health. I found that I was able to kind of like eat a few of those as I was going. Your health slowly regenerates. It's not Call of Duty or anything like that. It's much more like, I don't know, Skyrim, if you've got like a mild healing thing on.
Yeah.
But so like if you're getting hit repeatedly, like you're gonna die and then you're gonna have to load your save or whatever. But it's not that hard to stay alive, at least as the Amnesiac. You know, maybe it's like way worse. But when you start off, I was playing on Xbox, so I use the Xbox controller. Your A button or your cross button on PlayStation, like kicks the enemies away from you. So you do have a way to like make space, and then you can, you know, draw your bow and things like this. If you get a headshot, which like I didn't get that often, unless they were just like kind of standing around, it's an instant kill. But otherwise you need to hit them twice, which that part was like a little obnoxious when they were like moving quickly, or there were like three coming at me at once, but it was pretty easy to like bottleneck them. And then, later on you can actually get one of those golden bows that will like freeze, these enemies into statues. And at that point, like they're a blocking point where other enemies can't get through. So it's like, there's ways to alleviate this and make it easier for yourself. And there's also a lot of places where you can take pot shots at these enemies. I just wish there weren't that many of them, or the bow was better, or I only needed to hit them once, or like there was like a couple of different things where I was just like, it just goes on a little bit longer than I want it to, and it doesn't feel as good as I want it to, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
But other than that, like most of it is navigating the, like we were talking about earlier with Roki, like navigating, okay, what do I need to be doing now? And what do I need to do it? You're walking around, and a cool thing about this game is you keep everything. Because you return to a portal and then it loops back in time, anything you take from the environment is replenished and you keep whatever you took with you.
Mm.
So if you commit some sin and you take something dope and then you get out, you just have it from the jump. So once you have your weapon, you don't have to go get again. You just have it. And we were talking about making concessions to the player. A great thing that this game does is when you need, there are a number of important, capital I, important things that you need to do in the day to get to the end. And there are four endings to this game, and they're pretty interesting and fairly different, particularly when you get to the last one. There's a person who greets you when you come out of the portal. And as you complete these like important things and you come out of the portal, he introduces himself and you can say, "Hey, real quick, take this and go take care of this thing over here. Go talk to this person and tell them this." And he'll just do it. And then those things are just handled for you and you can explore and do something else.
That's nice.
So, and actually that having him do like a ton of stuff for you actually plays a part in one of the later endings that you can get. Which is great. And like, he's like, "Okay, you seem really serious and intense, so I'm gonna do this. And then we're going to talk about how you knew all this stuff was going to happen." And then it kind of plays into that sort of a thing. But it's interesting. I really like it. I had a lot of fun with it. Yeah, it is good. And it's, again, on Game Pass, so why not?
Yeah. The like screenshots of it, the art, and like some of the visuals we have behind me, it looks very similar to, if you guys have seen the new Myst remake. Like, just, like, visually, it reminds me a lot of that. I haven't played it yet, but I have that on the quest, too.
Missed a super.
But, yeah, I like it. I think it's interesting. It says some interesting things about sin and death and
civilization,
all sorts of stuff like that. Yeah.
Look, you
living
had me
in
a time
society
loop,
with other people.
You had me
What's
a
that?
You had me a time loop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's It is really interesting. I was playing several games this week, and I was like, oh, this is just X game that I played earlier this year. Oh, this is just this
other
game.
With a new skin on it, yeah.
The ending is just this, you know. So it's very, very... There are several games that I've reviewed from this show, or on this show, that have very similar themes and or specific story beats and or mechanics or very specific, like, things that happen. So yeah, I like it a lot. Other than the jank, which like would have been there if it was a Skyrim mod anyway.
Yeah.
Like I think it's great.
Nice.
So
sounds cool.
Good deal, man.
Yeah. Other than that, just been chilling. Watched the end of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Really enjoyed that. That show got fucking real.
Is it over like completely?
Yeah.
Oh man. I think we got to like season six, five or six.
Last season, they go fucking hard.
Oh, I bet.
Like, you get to the episode, and you're like, wow, I know when George Floyd happened.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they talk about it, and COVID, and police brutality, and they really, like, that's, like, the end of the final season of the show is basically about that.
Wow.
Wow, goddamn.
I'll have to watch
it. Goddamn, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Have you guys seen Red Notice?
No, with... that's that Rock Gal Gadot Ryan Reynolds vehicle, huh?
Yeah, I gotta tell you, don't listen to the Rotten Tomatoes score, the critic score. Look at the audience score, because goddamn, what a film. Like, it was just, it's such a fun watch. We watched it Saturday morning when we first woke up. Cats got us up at like 7. And
Jesus.
It was awful.
Cats are the worst.
Yeah. And it's a better Uncharted movie than I think the Uncharted movie is going to be. Like, there's just a lot of, like, thievery and trickery. Really good action sequences.
Jesus Christ, 36%.
Yeah, holy, I don't know why shit. Critics have been dumping on it that badly, but the audience score is, like, 92 or 96.
It is 92. Holy
yeah.
shit.
So I don't know what's going on there. But, like, The Rock and Ryan Reynolds have a really good chemistry. I don't think... Like, publicly, I will say this. I don't think Gal Gadot is a very good actress, period.
Yeah.
But I think she's better in this than she is in the Wonder Woman movies.
Oh, that will be nice.
Yeah. which, I mean, it's not a high hill to climb. And I know, like, I think she, and I say visually as, like, she looks like Wonder Woman in Wonder Woman. Not like, she looks so hot. Like, she's a very attractive woman. That is a statement. That is a fact. We'll move on from it. But she, I think the way that they have written her character, and like she's not as rigid as I think Wonder Woman has to be, or at least the way that they present her in those two movies. This one, she definitely plays off of the two of them a little bit more. She just has more to work with. If you have Netflix, definitely check that movie out because it's super, super fun. Really good action sequences and mystery and surprises and all that. Good popcorn flick.
I've been missing those.
Yeah.
Your James Bonds, your Ocean's 11. You know,
it's like Ocean's 11 meets at one point National Treasure.
I mean, hey, you made the sale.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's one point where I'm like, I feel like I'm watching Uncharted. Like, just make him Nathan Drake, and let's just call it a day.
You had me, and I was going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. God, come on, let's be real. One of the great line deliveries of our time.
No, it's not. Are you serious?
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
No. That one's fine. The one that that kills me, like, and I get so mad every time I watch that movie and it comes up, is when he's like, they're in Independence Hall, and they're unraveling the Declaration of Independence. He's like, you know, the last time this document was in this building, it was being signed. And they all are supposed to be like, whoa, like, it's just like the worst delivery ever. I love and hate Nick Cage so much.
God. We need to get another like Con Air performance out of him ASAP.
We should have 10 Con Airs instead of 10 Fast and the Furiouses.
That's very true.
Yes,
that's very true.
Yes,
It's basically the same movies. You just don't have any of those people at the helm because you got Nick Cage and Steve Buscemi being a stone cold creep.
When he comes off the bus and he does like the little thing with his head and he's like shaking his hair.
Yes.
Like, oh my God.
I'm living for it.
Con Air is a film. What a film.
Peak yeah. caginess.
Yes. Peak Cage.
Yeah.
Ugh. You got anything else, folks? Or shall we wrap?
Main thing I just want to touch on real quick. Resident Evil 7.
You were telling me about this.
Yeah, so if you've played Resident Evil 7 in VR, please tweet at me and tell me how you did it. Because I could barely get through the beginning sections of it with the lights on TV. Because like there's just a lot of like grossness in the game. Like there's just like a lot of bugs and just like tight spaces. It's like all these things that I just really don't like in real life. And this is like, you know, the first person Resident Evil that they've done. It's just very gross. But that being said, the game is excellent. I clocked it. I finished it up in about 8.5 hours. I think the way that they introduce, or they kind of like space the bosses between one another, the Baker family is very, very, it's very, just very well designed. And it gives you like a little bit of backstory for each one of them as like who they were before they became the weirdos that they are. And like, how that kind of plays into like the level design of like each of the spaces that you end up in. I think a lot of the puzzles are pretty easy, which not that many Resident Evil puzzles are that hard, but I think they are. Like, you know, it you have a few where it takes a second. It's like, oh, okay, I got it. There are too many moments, I think, that, and granted, I think I'd say this about every Resident Evil game. Where you start to run out, you'll have like 5 enemies and 6 bullets, and then you're like, I guess I just have to run past them because I can't kill them all. And then like it's just that it's creating tension, and I get it. But there were too many moments where, like in the beginning, when I was learning that or re-remembering that, where I was just like, I feel like I can't even get past this part. This is ridiculous. And then you know you sprint through it, and you're like, okay, I just had to get past whatever this gross enemy was. But all that being said, it's Metroid but spooky. Like, Brian hasn't played a Resident Evil game. And,
which is shocking to me, because right? you love them. Like, you would love these.
Yeah.
I hope this is another Hitman where, like, I play it and I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. I see like, what people are talking about.
I will say, like, not all of them are great. Like, 5 is okay. It's more action-y. From what I hear, 6 is not very good. I'm not a fan of 1.
Just
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of 1. And then 2 and 3 remake are supposed to be very good. I played half of 2 remake and then got stuck because I ran out of resources. I should probably just start the game over again. And then, yeah, I mean, 7's a great introduction to it. It's completely different than all the other, you know, games of the franchise. There's really only one thing that happens where you'll be like... A thing will happen and you won't realize how big of a deal it is. And it's like kind of a big deal. It's not even like that huge. So it's a good first game into the series. It really, like I said to you the other day on Discord, like it just comes down to whether or not you want to play a first person Resident Evil or a third person one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, they're Metroid, but spooky.
You should play 4 because it's one of the best games ever made.
Yeah. I started playing that in VR. That is... all kinds of fun.
I'm not sure if I have 4. I might have 4.
Everyone
has
4.
4 has been released on every platform known to man. It will
but
run
here's
on
the
your-
thing.
4
I
was
don't
on
play-
Ouya.
Here's the thing, though. I don't play Spook-em-ups, so I might not have it.
4 is not that scary.
4 is not scary. No.
Oh, I do have it. I have it on Steam.
There you go.
I got it in that bundle, I think. Yeah, I have Resident Evil.
Let's say they give that away with like samples of Tide in the mail.
4, 5. And Resident
everybody
Evil 6
has that
benchmark
game.
Tool. Why do I have that?
That's weird.
It must have just come in the package.
Resident Evil 4 is like Doom and like Skyrim. It's on everything. Everybody owns at least one copy, even if you never bought it.
Yep. It's just there.
It's just there. It's like Minesweeper. It launches with the system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
RE7, if you have a PS5, you get it automatically with PlayStation Plus. I think it's on Game Pass along with I think some of the other Resident Evil games are on there as well.
It was either on Game Pass or it was on Games with Gold on Xbox. Yeah. Because I definitely have access to it on both PlayStation and Xbox for sure.
Okay.
For 7, at least.
Yeah, I was surprised at how quickly... because normally, like, Jess can't watch me play first-person games. And even she, like, she was playing on her phone and it would glance up, like, whenever, like, a cinematic moment would be happening. But it got to the point where, like, yesterday morning and then, you know, had my shift. And I, like, texted her and I was like, so what do you want to do tonight? She's like, I want you to beat Resident Evil because I need to know what happens. And it was like, oh, shit, okay. Like, I guess this is what we're doing tonight.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's a good, couch... game as well for somebody that, like, you know, if Audrey wants to watch you play something, it's good for that too.
Cool. I'll probably play it on Xbox then.
Amen.
Cool.
Catch the fever.
Oh yeah. By the way, Forgotten City, Catch the Fever Award. Unpacking,
oh,
Catch the Fever Award, and I think we can say Roki got the Catch the Fever Award. Will, would you give Roki or Unpacking the patented platformers Catch the Fever Award?
Yes.
Yeah?
Unequivocally, yes.
Excellent. Hey, Chris, Red Notice, Catch the Fever?
Oh, hell yeah. Catch the Fever on Red Notice.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Will, do you have any final thoughts about any of the stuff we talked about?
Anything you want to plug, anything like that?
Can't think of anything. It's been dope to be here, though. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been nice having you.
It's been very nice having you. You're a very insightful human.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you very well spoken.
Thank you.
Well, yeah.
I try, you know? I used to be a college professor, so that's probably part of it.
Oh, yeah. That definitely helps.
That'll do it. Cool. Well, thank you all for joining us for episode 206. Can you believe it? 206.
If you can believe it,
it's a 206 episode of the Platformers once again. If you have any thoughts or topics or ideas or anything like that you want to share with us, you can find us on social media. You can hit us up corporately on Twitter at Platformers Pod. You can find me on Twitter. Oh my goodness.
Gesundheit.
In the middle of the outro. You can find me on Twitter at Ribnax, RIBNAX.
You can find me on Twitter at Shrives93. I will be live streaming my wedding at twitch.tv/Shrives93.
Hell
because
yeah.
A bunch of people keep asking whether or not I'm doing it, and that's the easiest way that I know how to get it out. And I don't care if strangers watch me get married. I'm going to look great, so why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I love the energy of it. No,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah. Will, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @bywillburger. That's burger with an O, not a U.
With an O, not a U. Very good. Is there anything that you're doing right now? Any work you want to plug or anything like that? Anywhere people can find you otherwise?
You can read about my experience with fighting games on Into the Spine, and I just did a review for IGN last month for Demon Slayer, the Hinokami Chronicle. So if you want to read my writing, those are a couple places you can check it out.
I read that review. It was very good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
there you go. And if you want to check out what I am doing, you can. Jesus, what have I been doing? You can check out the IGN guides for Far Cry 6, Call of Duty Vanguard, Skyrim. Yeah, I guess Elder Scrolls 5 Skyrim. And upcoming Halo Infinite. God, I was doing something else. I just can't remember what it was. Yeah, but that's mostly what I'm getting into now. So, all right. Please give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. We stream this episode every week on Twitch at twitch.tv/platformerspod. And we archive those episodes on YouTube at Utah.
No plane ticket required, folks. You just have to go to the state of Utah. You don't have to fly.
You'll know. Hey, you'll see. You'll know when you see it. YouTube.com/platformerspod. Yeah. Thanks again. Will for joining us. Thank you everybody for listening. And from everybody here at The Platformers, we hope that you have a wonderful week and stay safe out there. Until next time, we are out.
Bye-bye.
Peace.